Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is J.C. Clyde. I represent the Wesley Allen Family Trust and Barbara Allen in this case. I think the ultimate issue in this case comes down to whether trial courts have the power to grant injunctive relief to a party or another party to an agreement intends to violate that agreement. I think if the answer is yes, then the trial court clearly erred in this case. This is an appeal of the trial court's dismissal for want of, I think, for want of subject matter jurisdiction in the Allen's action for injunctive relief. Court's acquisition of subject matter jurisdiction depends on the facts existing at the time the jurisdiction is invoked. The court does not ordinarily lose jurisdiction by the occurrence of subsequent events, even if those events would have prevented the court from acquiring jurisdiction in the first place. In 2011, the Allens discovered that defendant Homestead Homeowners Association entered into an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with Eagle County to make certain conveyances that affected the Allen easement. The court's aware, I know that you've read the briefs, but the Allens hold an easement that traverses Homestead Open Space from Homestead Finally to South City Landlocked.
How exactly does it affect the easement, Mr. Plott? My understanding from the record is that there are some people using your easement, but those are not necessarily people who are there as a result of the homestead easement.
I think you can look to what's not, to the absence of, or to lack of what Homestead did to answer that question. When Homestead conveyed the easement to the Eagle Valley Land Trust subsequent to the Allen's action, they didn't exclude the ground, they didn't exclude the Allen easement. And the reason for that, Your Honor, it comes down to trails. And it comes down to what Mr. Furman said, the attorney for Homestead, that they've always had the power to convey trails, access across trails, access, public access to, they've always had a right to grant public access to land they own, and that was reiterated by their manager. And on limited remand, the manager testified that they had left open the issue of granting public trails and public access to the trails. Had they excluded the Allen easement from their conveyance, this wouldn't be, I don't think it would be that big of an issue, but they didn't, and they left it in for that reason.
But Mr. Plott, isn't the conservation easement subject to the Allen easement?
That is certainly one way of interpreting it. Certainly one way of looking at it. But again, I think it comes back to the permitted uses that are in the conservation deed and the management plan and what Homestead would do in the future with what they have now, or what they can arrange to do with Eagle Mountain Land Trust.
If there's, in fact, trespasses in the future, though, don't you have a legal remedy?
We do have a legal remedy in the future, Your Honor. Those trespasses are one of them difficult to find because no one, barring an incident, no one's going to be standing there cataloging who's coming by on these trails. I don't know that that would happen. As Homestead noted, there's no turnstile, there's no physical barrier that keeps people from coming on these trails. I feel like I missed the end of that question.
Isn't that a problem that's inherent with these kinds of easements? I mean, certainly, you wouldn't argue, would you, that Homestead doesn't have the right to grant easements across its property so long as it doesn't interfere or cross your easement?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor. The issue that we have is that if you look back to the MLU, the framework was there that they were going to grant public access across the Allen easement, which, if you look at the easement document itself, is on the record multiple times. That really denies Homestead the power to make any further conveyances. And I would suggest that denies Homestead the power to make any further conveyances, even subject to that are made subject to the Allen easement. I don't think the power is there. They cannot do it. It goes back to what harm is there? They don't have the power to do it. That's essentially. But if the court looks back to the history of this case, it's somewhat peculiar. The trial court dismissed the case on, I think, for want of subject matter jurisdiction. That goes to the standards of review that this court should apply. I think under any standard of review, either under a 12b1 analysis or you're looking for a clearly erroneous action by the district court, I think the trial court was wrong to dismiss the action in the first instance. This is an issue in this case significantly because of costs and attorney fees that are imposed pursuant to the fee shifting agreement and the Allen easement. So when we come back to it a year and a half later, after the homestead has conveyed their easement to the Eagle Valley Land Trust, the deed of conservation easement, it's different in form from what was originally planned, and that was because the Allens brought their action. But had this stayed in the jurisdiction of the trial court, I don't think that the Allens would have been excluded from it. And you could, perhaps, the Allens could have worked with all parties, in all honesty, to work with them to provide public access. It didn't happen that way, but that's history. I want to address briefly the mootness issue, and this goes to the court's question concerning future trespasses. And the trail issue is significant because the trial court made a finding in its final order on limited remand that there is a trail that is inside the area of the conservation easement that does cross the Allen easement, but the trail is not open to the public. There's no physical barrier stopping people from going on the trail. I think we can be clear on that. But the issue can't be moved. I don't think it can be moved. I think it's certainly capable of repetition when Homestead has testified that they've left open the issue of granting public access to trails that are covered by this deed of conservation, even covered by trails to the public on land that they own. That's their testimony in the record. It seems unlikely likely that this issue is very capable of repetition should that contingency occur.
As I read the record, there was no testimony about any actual trespass other than Ms. Allen letting people onto the property. So we're talking about something occurring, but there's not even evidence that it has occurred, at least not in this record.
Not in this record, I don't think you will find that. Number one, the Allens aren't going to be bringing in, I sincerely doubt that they're going to bring a civil trespass action against someone. That's just not, I don't see that happening. But in this record, Your Honor, you are correct. There is no actual trespass committed by an identified party across the Omnison other than the danger that exists because of the maps, because of the failure to control or gate the area.
Is your trail posted, Mr. Plum?
Your Honor, is the question directed at this day and time, if it's, or at another date?
Well, it goes to my question earlier about the inherent nature of these kinds of trails. Somebody comes riding along on a horse or pull up on their ATV and they take off across the open area. How are they to know what trail to take and what trail not to take? It's, as you pointed out quite correctly, there's no turnstiles. There's no ordered control.
Your Honor, the question, I think, is as the evidence exists in the record, I think there's a map at one of the possible trailheads. And understand that when the Allens brought this action, they really threw a wrench in the plans. Had it gone to the county, I believe it's in this record, but the county had purchased a 160-acre parcel that is south of Homestead and abuts the Allen Upper 80. There are trails that run through there. It's county open space, but those trails, and this is one of the findings of the trial court here, do intersect. And the only way to get to the National Forest from these trails is to go across the Allen easement. And it's hard to describe, but the pictures are in the record in the beginning of the record attached to the complaint. The court has no further questions. I'd like to reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Deborah Oppenheimer, registration 19066, on behalf of Homestead Owners Association. Counsel for the Allens continues to direct this court down blending trails and using evidence that's not of record. just a moment ago in trying to answer the court's question, is the trail posted, instead of referencing the testimony that came out of record and which is in front of the court in the transcript, he starts describing stuff that's not in front of the court, that's not of record, about the L and whether there's other trails. And that's not what's in front of this court and not the decision in front of the court. The issue before this court is whether the trial court properly made a determination and whether that trial court abused their discretion, because that is the standard of review for a mootness decision. This court remanded the case back down to the trial court and asked that court to make an evidentiary finding on whether the issues were moot. Court held a hearing, made that determination upon listening to testimony. The evidence, what was presented to the court, that burden was on the Allens should they wish to present something, should they wish to present whether there was trespasses, should they wish to present that there's an issue with something that was going on, and they didn't. What's in front of the court and what evidence was presented in trying to establish that there was subject matter jurisdiction is lacking. What was presented is that the issue is moot. What the trial court properly looked at and reviewed was testimony that the MOU, which was a non-binding document, all obligations pursuant to that MOU had been completed. What evidence was presented to the trial court was that the conservation easement that had issued and was completed did not in any way affect an interest in the Allen easement. Mr. Plott just a moment ago said in front of you that the Owners Association was prohibited from making a conveyance. That's not what 2.4 of the Allen easement says. 2.4 of the Allen easement says that Homestead Owners Association is prohibited from granting an interest in the easement. Your Honor, as Judge Dunn properly said, the conservation easement specifically makes itself subject to all interest in the Allen easement. Not once, not twice, but 9 separate times throughout the conservation easement, beginning with the most important clause, the granting clause, specifying that easement is absolutely subject to and does not affect the Allen easement. Mr. Plott suggested that had the Owners Association pulled out the land, that would have cured it. But that's actually contrary to his other argument, which he briefed in front of this court. In his argument, he said that because the easement, the conservation easement, was granted, it now would preclude the Allens from realigning the road, if need be. In the Allen easement, the Allens have the right to realign the road, if need be, when they go to build it. By making the conservation easement subject to the Allen easement, all of the abilities of the Allens remain intact. It's not subject to just a piece of land pulled out of the conservation easement. In fact, the conservation easement makes itself subject to the Allen easement, thus keeping all the Allen easement intact with no effect to it, which is what the designations were intended to do, to not affect it, but to allow, again, the association to make use of its property, all the remaining land surrounding the Allen easement, and make use of it in a way that they felt beneficial to the owners of the community.
Ms. Hoffman, I want to ask you, what about the contention that this can evade review, that there's no one out there detecting potential trespassers, so the only way to really catch it is on the front end?
Well, but Your Honor, first of all, the claim that was presented by the Allens was not that there was going to be trespasses. The claim presented by the Allens was that the MOU mandated a conveyance in violation of the Allens. That's the only claim that was in front of the judge. So when the trial court made a determination, it's looking at the claim in front of it. And is the claim in front of it whether or not the MOU mandates a conveyance in contradiction to the Allen easement? It does not. And the MOU thus being completed, that issue is moot. The issue raised by the Allens now is to raise a completely different issue to try and substantiate some claim of there's going to be a repetition. But again, they miss. If you look at their opening brief said, the question was, is it capable of repetition? The exception, as this court's well aware, is not is it capable of repetition, but is it capable of repetition but evading review? And a trespass will never evade review. If there are damages, they will have the right to file an action in front of the court. The conservation easement itself
did not make any possible trespasses more or less likely. The area, as the testimony in front of the trial court already clearly demonstrated, was that that area of land is still restricted to only homestead owners and the Allens and their guests. None of that was changed. Nothing within the conservation easement opened any of the 120 acres to the public. So the actions of the association have made trespass no more likely or no less likely than they were before. They've taken no additional steps to increase some risk to the assessor, to the Allens. There is nothing in the Allen easement that makes the Homestead Owners Association responsible to stop all trespasses. But in addition to that, Your Honor, the testimony of the trial court was very clear. The only party that had invited the public onto the Allen easement was Mrs. Allen. That testimony is in the transcript where she invited the public onto the easement, and Homestead had taken the actions to put up a gate to stop that, to protect her easement. So in contrast to what they're telling you now of, oh my gosh, there'll be a trespass and we'll be damaged, they were inviting people onto their property. Mr. Plott indicated a moment ago that while they would have been willing to enter into conversations regarding this conservation easement, and in their footnotes to their brief, they explain why, which is for money. So had they been invited, then they would have been willing to sell their interests, but because they weren't invited is why the lawsuit, in fact, is in front of this court. But again, that doesn't go back to the issue that was being decided by the trial court, which is the claim of the Allens moot? Again, the evidence shows that just by looking at the conservation easement and the 9 separate times it says it's subject to the Allen easement, there is no interest in the Allen easement ever given in the conservation easement. The MOU itself, the only testimony was from David Furman and Tracy Erickson, who both said all conditions of the MOU are now complete. Therefore, there's nothing left at issue, so therefore that issue is moot. Nothing that could happen that's been raised as far as public access and damage would have been reviewed. Claims can be filed anytime that happens in the future. So again, there's nothing about the easement and those possible trespasses that would have been reviewed. Thus, the decisions of the trial court remain correct that, in fact, it isn't. There's nothing left, so the subject matter jurisdiction doesn't exist anymore. The other issue in front of this court is the issue that the trial court decided as to who was prevailing party. The trial court made a determination, as is their right and as is the discretion of the trial court, that the Homestead Owners Association was the prevailing party. Now, the Allens challenge that and suggest that in some fashion the Allens are actually prevailing because in their claims, and I believe Mr. Plott repeated them a moment ago when he said that the conveyance changed from what was originally put forth, and therefore that change must have been from the lawsuit. But again, going back to the evidence and what was presented in front of the court and the trial court had to rely upon, that's not what the facts show. The evidence and what's in the transcript, the only testimony about what happened with the negotiations was again from David Furman. David Furman testified, it's in the transcripts, that in fact the only discussions about the MOU were 3 months worth that terminated in November. This lawsuit was filed in December, a month later. Nothing about this lawsuit had any effect on the MOU, the negotiations, or what was happening.
Let me ask you, and maybe Mr. Plott could comment on this as well. There was never any trial on the merits, is that correct?
Correct.
So how can there be a prevailing party?
Because in fact, the easement by very condition says that if either party sues and the other party incurs attorney's fees in defending that suit, that the prevailing party, in fact, is entitled to their attorney's fees. There is case law in front of the court that in fact, you can be a prevailing party simply by defeating the claim against you, which is what the association has done in this case. Association has had to show up for a preliminary hearing, file motions, respond to appeals, all at a cost to the association, and at each stage have been found to be not at fault and have the case dismissed or remanded or found moot and dismissed. Each time, though, those fees are properly rewarded back to the association as prevailing on each stage of that litigation. The Allens argued, in fact, that in their brief that they believe they somehow had become the prevailing party because they now claim that they have stopped public access. So although they stand on Friday and say there's going to be public access and it's going to damage us, then in part of their argument in front of this court in their brief, they argue, oh no, there's not going to be public access and therefore we won, and so give us attorney's fees. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that in fact Mr. Plott just argued that you should in fact send this back down to county court, I'm sorry, to district court, because if you send it back down to district court and there's a determination, then they may be able to obtain fees. That's what this all boils down to, the part of the Allens, is that intent in obtaining fees against the association. But again, the testimony doesn't substantiate anything he said. The testimony in front of the court was there was one MOU, only one MOU. Testimony of the court was all the negotiations for the MOU and the process were completed long before the lawsuit was filed. All of the evidence has shown that at each stage of the litigation, whether it was the denial of the temporary restraining order, the denial of the preliminary restraining order, the loss at the appeals court when it was sent back down on a mootness determination as requested by the association, or at the mootness hearing determination, the association was the prevailing party. Therefore, they should in fact be awarded attorney's fees. Your Honor, the position of the association is that, again, this is a decision for the court on an abuse of discretion. You sent it down for an evidentiary hearing, court made findings, those findings are reviewed under that abuse of discretion. And the review of that is, was there evidence to support the determinations made? And the evidence is quite clear and abundant within the transcript, within the two documents that were submitted at the hearing on mootness, which is conservation easement and the land management plan. Those two documents alone with the testimony show very clearly that the court did have ample evidence to substantiate it was moot. It's not capable of repetition. The evidence is clear as well that it was proper for the court to find the association to be the prevailing party. There isn't anything of record that substantiates the claims of the Allens. When I was standing here just a moment ago, I believe misspoke when he said that the association cannot grant any conveyance, because that's clearly not the terms of 2.4 of the Allen easement. 2.4 of the Allen easement says the association cannot grant an interest in the easement, which is very different from saying the association cannot convey anything to anyone. If this court were to follow the position of the Allens, the restrictions on easement owners would be extreme. To suggest that if you grant an easement across one small piece of your property, that you are therefore precluded from ever granting any conveyance across the rest of your property would be a horrible law and would make it horrible for anyone to ever grant a conveyance, to grant it after they've once granted an easement. Given how necessary easements are, how frequently they're granted, to follow the line of reasoning of the Allens would put a very extreme reading on the law of easements and be inappropriate. The association took every step to exclude the easement, to ensure that in fact they didn't violate it and they granted no future interest in the easement. Therefore, we ask the court to affirm the decision of the district court, remand it down for determination on the amount of attorney's fees owed to the association for successfully defeating at each stage of the proceedings.
Thank you, Ms. Oppenheimer. Mr. Plott, we have 5 3/4 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. The association didn't take every step to keep the Allens out of this, to keep the easement out of this. They could have excluded, simple as excluding these owners in the description, which is in the Allen easement, of the Allen easement. They didn't do that. They chose not to do that because they chose not to do that. Ms. Oppenheimer said that they didn't do anything they trespass, more or less likely. They most definitely did, especially when you include trails in your conservation deed and in the management plan, the Eagle Valley Land Trust, and then you also stand there and take the position that, yes, we have the power to grant public access across any land that we own. That statement, I think, is definitive, coming from Homestead. And that's the position that they're going to take, and I can guarantee that this case, another case, a case like this will be back before this court.
But how would it escape review?
Your Honor, the easement provides for two kinds of relief. One, injunctive relief, and two, was relief at law for damages. If you deny injunctive relief, then how would you ever stop, how would you ever get in front of it? How would you ever stop the conveyance from happening to begin with? You're always going to be chasing the relief that you're seeking. Or you're always going to be chasing something, trying to correct it after the fact, versus saying, stop, don't do that. Which is what Alan said in this case. Is it, I think it's more a matter of convenience. Can we stop it before it happens? Is it still capable of review? At some level, it is still capable of review, unfortunately, after the fact. When you have multiple parties now, maybe about an antitrust before it was the county, now see about an antitrust, it just brings more headache into it when you had just one party before. This Oppenheimer scale of doom is frankly a little bit far-fetched. Property owners are able to negotiate the easements that they want. They're able to negotiate the contract that they want. If they don't want language in an easement, then they shouldn't put it there. But this is the easement that Homestead agreed to, and this easement only permits further conveyances by the Allens. As far as, I'll make one note on the attorney fees issue, this court sent this matter back on limited remand, not on the issue of attorney fees, on the determination of mootness. If we wanted, we didn't, my suggestion is that we didn't actually try that, we didn't try anything. And one of the problems with dismissal under 12b1 is that you don't actually reach a decision on the merits.
Well, in a way you do. Homestead takes the position that the matter is moot, and then you're not entitled to any relief because it's moot. And they prevailed on that issue. How is it that you are only a prevailing party if you force the other side to try the case on the merits?
I think if it were something like summary judgment, I'd agree that you have reached a decision on the merits. As to this claim, when you talk about the case being moot because, as the trial court said, the signing of the deed of conservation easement completed all obligations under the MOU. Number one, the case wasn't moved before then. If that's true, then logically the case was not moved if the deed of conservation easement wasn't signed. So this court is in a special position. We were in a special position. The case wasn't moved when it was originally dismissed. And I think that, I don't know how that conclusion can be escaped based on the trial court's conclusion that the signing of the deed of conservation easement is what mooted the case. And that goes back to the subject matter jurisdiction that attaches when the case is filed and the case is not moot. So with that, I would ask the court to reverse and remand with further instructions. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Plott. Thank you again, Ms. Oppenheimer. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.